Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thank you very much for hanging around with me, Mr. Wonderful, at your service. As always, it's good to be with you. It's good to continue to be with you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you have already been listening today, well, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. And I'm excited about having our new friend on the show, folks. You probably know her a little bit. If you've been watching ABC News, you've seen Jan Crawford Greenberg. There she is, a correspondent for ABC News. She covers law and politics for World News Tonight, for Nightline, for Good Morning America, this week with George Stephanopoulos, which is one of my favorite shows. And she is the author of the brand new book, Supreme Conflict, the inside story of the struggle for control of the United States Supreme Court. And she's our new friend. Jan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you here, and I'm really proud of you. Good for you with your book. It's a good one.
Well, thank you. I very much appreciate that. You know, I really feel fortunate because I was able to talk to 9 of the justices, you know,
wow,
go in their chambers and really kind of get the behind-the-scenes story of a lot of things that, you know, we've always been curious about, you know, how it really happened.
And, of course, you did your research prior to the 2 new ones, right?
Yes.
Prior to Roberts and Alito.
Half the book looks at the Rehnquist Court and
right,
all the backstory with all those justices and Bush versus Gore and Justice Thomas's real role on the court. And then the second half of the book, you know, goes through those 2 nominations and how President Bush ended up with Roberts. And then, you know, he had that misstep with Harriet Myers.
Right.
What was the backstory there?
Which we're going to talk about all that. But, Jan, here's the thing.
Sure.
You got to feel blessed to have been there during a moment when you could interview Justice Rehnquist and Justice O'Connor while they were sitting on the bench. It's got to go down as a high point in your career.
Well, I have to say, just covering the court and watching these justices, and, you know, there's not any cameras in the courtroom, so just to be able to go in and talk to them, it was quite amazing.
But my point was from the standpoint of them getting to beats to talk to them, whether your politics and their politics were, you know, aligned
sure,
or not, none of that, irrespective of all that, just getting to talk to those 2 before they left the court, that's it. To me, that would be a big deal.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's really, I just, like I said, I feel fortunate that I was able to talk to them. So, you know, it was quite a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, I heard some really pretty amazing stories, and a lot of what I heard, I've been covering the court since 1994, and a lot of what I heard really, really surprised me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and I want to get to that in just a second. Folks, as many of you know, the Supreme Court, and you use the word struggle in your subtitle, and the title, you use the word conflict in the title. The Supreme Court for really about, well, probably for a long time, but certainly for at least 50 years, maybe a little more than 50 years. Unless we could probably go back to Brown versus, you know, the Brown versus U.S. Case, which was the issue that ended the Jim Crow laws back in the 50s and all that. Since that time, the Supreme Court really has been in many ways a battleground, hasn't it?
Oh, on every issue and case after case. Think about all the big issues, you know, that really shape our lives and our society, whether it's, you know, as you said, race relations and school integration, abortion, affirmative action, religion, presidential power, you know, on and on, employment decisions, discrimination decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on all these huge, big issues.
Did you say abortion? If you didn't, we must say that.
Oh, no. I mean, that one's front and center.
Yeah.
And, you know, and oddly enough, on all those cases, and that's how I kind of started the book, because, you know, when you think about the court, I look back over the, you know, the Rehnquist court that was together from 1994 until O'Connor stepped down and then Rehnquist, of course, died shortly after in 2005. You know, that court was together for 11 years,
right,
and it had 7 Republican-appointed justices on it. So you had
mm-hmm.
7 Republican justices, Yet that was a court that on all those issues we were just talking about, in every case, took a liberal path. And so, you know, why was that? I mean, how did that court end up being a great disappointment to conservatives? And so that was some of the things that I was trying to figure out and look at, and, you know, how justices got nominated and how they affected each other once they got up on the bench and who might have persuaded whom and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the thing that I see in all that, part of the reason why I think the court was left, moved to the left on some issues. Number one was some people got nominated and approved who were not as conservative as they were in, they thought they were going to be. And the other thing is, I think you had some intellectually honest people there who looked at the issues and weighed the evidence and made the decision based on what they thought it should be.
It's a combination of both, right?
Stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. Jan Crawford Greenberg is our guest. She's the author of Supreme Conflict, a new book out on the Supreme Court, on the Rehnquist Court. It's 22. Stay with us. A lot more to come after these messages. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Don't forget to check out our blog while you're there, and use all the other resources and capability that's there to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And it's all free. Nothing will cost you anything unless you decide to buy a book. We will charge you for that, but everything else is free, no barrier to entry, and I hope you use it to your advantage. That's smallbusinessadvocate.com. Supreme Conflict is the book. The author is Jan Crawford Greenberg. She's our new friend, but really not, because we see her on ABC News all the time. Jan, give us the website and tell us where the book's available, please.
Well, the book's available on Amazon and any, of course, bookstore around. So I hope you like it. I really feel fortunate that I was able to write it. You know, the Supreme Court's so mysterious, and the justices, mm-hmm. we don't really know. And so to be able to, you know, talk to them and kind of get the inside stories on a lot of the cases, like Bush versus Gore, and, you know, I feel really fortunate to be able to tell that story because, of course, I mean, the Supreme Court has a pretty big impact on our lives.
Well, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why both sides of the aisle know that elections matter.
That's right. And that's the president's, you know, most lasting legacy. And President Bush got two nominations, and he really changed the direction of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And the next president, I suspect, will get one or two nominations and, again, have a moment to put his or her stamp on the Supreme Court as well. Because, you know, they're up there. Once they're nominated, they've got life tenure.
Exactly.
And so the president leaves town, and those justices stay up there for decades.
Well, let's talk about what you, the basically the larger theme of your book, which is the disappointment in many ways in what should be a conservative court by some of the conservatives. Tell us about
sure,
that.
You know, the conservative presidents have tried and failed largely to dramatically change the direction of the Supreme Court. You know, starting back with President Nixon, you know, people were wanting at that time to try to change the court away from some of those rulings.
The infamous Warren Court.
Walk away from those liberal decisions. But over the years, all those efforts by those Republican presidents really fell short. And so what we ended up with was this court led by William Rehnquist with seven Republican-appointed justices, and that was a court that on abortion, on affirmative action, on religion, on presidential power, on criminal issues, on case after case after case.
On the takings law.
Right, took a liberal path. And, you know, it was Ronald Reagan, for example, tried to change the direction of the court. He got four appointments, and he ended up with a court about as liberal as the one he started out with. So, you know, President Bush had an historic chance to go a different path, and he made the most of it. His advisors looked back at all those past nominations, determined not to repeat those past mistakes as they saw it.
But then repeated one.
Blunder of Harriet Myers.
Let me restate that. He didn't repeat it. He created a whole new level of mistake.
But the fascinating thing about the Myers story.
What's the story on that?
Well, you know, and, you know, after, because the second half of the book looks at these nominations, and, you know, I talked to many people inside the White House, inside the Justice Department, on Capitol Hill to get, you know, the real story of what happened. And Bush, it's really two things. I mean, Bush wanted to nominate a woman to replace Justice O'Connor. Andy
right.
Card, his chief of staff, told Bush's lawyers, no white guys. And so they looked far and wide, and everyone kind of fell short because President Bush was determined not to repeat his father's mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, his dad had nominated David Souter, and
right.
President Bush was seared. That was the word his advisors used, seared
okay.
by that decision, and he was not going to do it. His dad was
Sununu brought that one on him, didn't he?
Sununu told his dad.
John Sununu, his chief of staff.
Right. Told his dad, David Souter's conservative. He's a solid conservative. Sununu didn't know what he was talking about.
He's as liberal as they
he
come.
He is the most liberal justice on the court.
He's off
and he
the
was
scale.
Almost immediately when he
yeah.
went on.
Yeah.
So Bush knew Harriet Myers, and he yeah. knew she was conservative. This was his thinking. And he knew she wouldn't change. So his decision to nominate her was very much shaped by his father's mistake in nominating
mm-hmm.
Souter. But, of course, it was just a series of disconnect, miscommunication,
yeah.
managerial failures at every
very
level in the White House.
Very disappointing.
And Bush didn't listen. He
and you know what?
Myers,
Harriet Myers didn't deserve that. I really felt sorry for her. I felt
I
like she
too.
Was the victim in the whole thing.
It's yeah. a really sad story. And when you go back and hear what really happened, how she became the nominee, and then ultimately how she had to be, I didn't know this either, how she had to be talked out of withdrawing because she didn't want to give up. She didn't want to quit. You know,
wow.
remember how Bush always described her as that pit bull
mm-hmm.
in size six shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the president, Andy Card, decided that she just was getting, I mean, she was just getting, remember, it was just brutal
oh, yeah, it was
what was
brutal.
Happening to her.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They concluded that she couldn't make it, and so that she had to withdraw. So Andy Card, President Bush's chief of staff, went to talk to her, and she didn't really get the message. And then he got her deputy, Bill Kelly, to go back and talk
mm-hmm.
to her a few hours later. And her deputy said, it's not working. We need to go a different path.
Right.
And Harriet Myers said, no, you know, I can't quit.
Wow.
You know, we'll fight. I mean, I can do this. I can learn it. I can do it. And it took another visit by Andy Card later in that day for her to realize that President Bush thought that was the best course. And so
yeah.
that night, she
of
wrote her letter.
Yeah, that was a very unfortunate thing, and I'm sorry that happened. Another thing, and I'm going to mention it, and we've got to go to a break, Jan, is the eminent domain issue, the Kelo versus New London case, which is something that I wrote about and have covered quite a bit in the last couple of years. It was very disappointing to me, and that's the Fifth Amendment, the takings clause in the Fifth Amendment that was all about, folks. You remember that. We're going to talk about this and more stuff with our new friend, Jan Crawford Greenberg, the author of Supreme Conflict. It's all about the Rehnquist Supreme Court. It's a very good book, folks. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Gonna climb a mountain.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our new friend, Jan Crawford Greenberg. She's the author of Supreme Conflict, the inside story of the struggle for control of the United States Supreme Court. Jan, and by the way, I'm fascinated by your book. I just want to congratulate, and I'll tell you, I have to make a confession.
Okay.
I'm a little bit jealous.
Now, you should not be jealous. You're the, you know, best-selling author of very important books.
No.
I know you're not jealous of the book.
What are you jealous
of?
I am jealous because you got to interview all these people.
These
incredibly interesting people. And I really meant what I said earlier. I mean Rehnquist, politics aside, and Sandra Day O'Connor, what a couple of great Americans.
Well, they served the country with distinction for many,
well,
many years. And, you know, you may not agree with their politics, and you may not agree with their decisions.
I actually happen to. But that aside, I mean, and what about Rehnquist? What a horse.
Oh, and, you know, his decision to stay on that whole last
what a
year,
horse.
His determination to, you know, steer that ship home, leading that court like
when he
had
should have
for
been home with his
years.
Family those last months.
Well, you know, his beloved wife had died,
yeah.
you know, 15 years earlier,
mm-hmm.
and the court really, I mean, he was close to his children, but the court was, you know, like his family
too. It was
his life. And it was shocking that he didn't retire, that he decided to try to stay another year. And, of course, he died only 2 months later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of people that I spoke with about that decision, his decision not to retire, said he just, you know, he thought he could do the job. He was an optimist, you know. He thought he could make it another year.
Now, Jan, I know you're on a book tour, and I know you're doing a lot of these interviews today. But one of the things that you don't know about us probably is that we're like the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. So I have so many things I want to talk to you about. Will you come back another day? We're not through yet.
I would love to. I still have other
I still have other things I want to ask you before we go. But I just want to make sure you knew that I want to get you back and another day. I want you to come back another day and talk about Thomas and Scalia and that whole relationship.
Oh, yeah.
But there are two people that you don't talk very much about. I know you mentioned them, but you don't talk as much about them apparently in your book. And that's Ginsburg and Stevens, probably the most liberal on the court.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, of course, Justice Stevens was nominated by, a Republican president, Gerald Ford. And Justice Ginsburg, but, you know, there's so many interesting things that we could talk about with both of those guys. You know, Justice Ginsburg, nominated by President Clinton, a very liberal justice. But guess who her best friend is on the court?
Who?
Antonin Scalia.
Is that right?
Yeah, you know,
That's very interesting.
You know, a lot of the justices, you know, they love opera for, you know, for showing that they are a little different. Justice Ginsburg and Breyer, they have New Year's Eve. Justice Ginsburg and Scalia, they have New Year's Eve together, and they go to the opera together.
That's very interesting. Well, now, let me ask you a question. Is Ginsburg well?
She seems to be. You know, she had cancer.
She'd been
and
sick.
She seems to have put that behind her.
Right.
She's a very small woman. So if people don't know her, they think, oh, she doesn't look so good. But you know, she's just kind of that's just how her frame
She's a small person anyway.
Yeah.
But now Stevens, when's he going to retire? He's like 106, isn't he?
He's going to be 87 in April. Can you believe that?
I know.
But I interviewed him after President Ford's funeral, and he is as sharp as a tack. I mean, he looks like he isn't going anywhere. I mean, he's not slowing down, and he certainly isn't showing any signs of stepping down. So I would guess that President Bush is not going to get another nomination, which means that the next president, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, will be able to put his or her stamp on the Supreme Court, because if Stevens goes or if Ginsburg goes in the next 5 or 6 years, for Republicans, that could be a real chance to change the court even more to the right. But for Democrats, obviously a chance to keep it from going further to the right.
Well, and elections matter.
Well, you certainly see that in the Supreme Court, although those justices sometimes surprise the presidents that nominate them.
Well, they do, and that's what has happened many times. But, you know, Jan, the way I am about these things is I have a political, you know, direction that I bend, but I admire and appreciate intellectual honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And
people
who make a decision, even if it disagrees with me, if I believe that they've made what they believe is an informed decision, I can't be mad about that.
Well, you could take issue with it, like in Kelo. I'm sure in that taking
I
case
took a lot of issue
about.
With that. That's right.
Yeah, and you certainly can strongly disagree with it. But, you know, those liberal justices that were joined by Justice Kennedy in that case, you know, they outlined their reasons and the way that they saw the law. Now, you had a very strong dissent by O'Connor.
She came out of the woodwork, and I'll tell you, that was where we saw her true colors there. Jan, I'm sorry I have to go. Give us the website one more time.
It's my book, Supreme Conflict, is available on Amazon and all the bookstores. So
thanks, Jan.
Thank you so much.
Let's get you back again next time. Quick, I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.